Morning, everybody. Those of you that braved the elements, and for those of you online, we appreciate you being with us this morning. It's a beautiful day, really. If you like snow, I happen to like snow. But then my whole life was spent in schools, and snow meant I didn't have to go to work, so you can understand why. Let's have a word of prayer before we begin. God, we just thank you so much that we have the privilege of gathering, the freedom to gather, that we have a place and people that we can gather with. We thank you for the technology that allows people to join us even if they are not physically present with us. And we pray, God, that your spirit would be with all who are here and with all who are together with us in other places. And by the miracle of technology, not just today on January 31st, but at any point where this is watched, that those who are watching would be able to enter in to the spirit of this place, to the spirit of our God. We commit to you this time. We pray that you would move in our hearts and make us one as you are one. In Jesus' name, amen. Our scripture today comes from Luke chapter 9, and it's a familiar story, one that gets paraded out quite a bit, but we'll see if we can do something with it today that will be of use to us. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened up her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care?" Please note, this is my tone of voice. I wasn't there. "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work all by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed. Indeed, only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." Have you ever noticed that we are most disappointed in the people we care for the most? The ones that we're closest to. Have you ever noticed that we ourselves are the biggest disappointment to those we care about the most, to those we love, to our family, to our close friends? It seems true, and I believe it to be true, that the closer we are to someone, the more intimate the relationship, the more we become aware of how inadequate that person is to meet our deepest need for connection. And perhaps even more, we become aware of how inadequate we are to meet that other person's need. So today we will finish part 5 of a 5-part series that started in January and I got held over for a couple weeks, and I've called it Can You Imagine? And we started thinking about, wow, 2020, that was crazy. And can you imagine a year like that? But can you imagine something better? And we're looking towards 2021, and actually we're a 12th of the way through it. I know that's pretty exciting. You figure out the percentages, but like we're 8% of the way through 2021. Can you imagine a 2021 where things are better? And if so, how can we be a part of making them better for ourselves, for our family, for our communities, for our church? And we've dealt with this idea that to really understand how to make things better, we have to understand, really, in a sense, what's wrong and what is true about people so that we can appeal to the things in people that would allow them to make the choices that would make things better. And so we've been talking about this idea that we're created in the image of God, and that when we understand that, we can look even at people with whom we disagree, and we can see that there are 4 motivations that everybody has. Everybody wants to be great. And we talked about that and discovered that greatness really is about serving others. It's not about being famous or important or having the most power. Everybody wants to be good. Everybody wants to make the right choices. In fact, every choice you've ever made was the right choice at the moment you made it. But it's true, isn't it? Our worst choices started out as a good idea. And we realize that we need to acknowledge the emptiness of goodness within us to be filled with the goodness that only God can give us. Everybody wants to fix what's broken, but we think we can actually identify what's broken because all of our good ideas assume that we know what's going on and what's broken, and we realize that what needs to be broken is not the broader social issues, but that every human heart, broken in sinfulness, needs to be healed. And that's what true fixing really is. And today we'll talk about being intimately connected in relationship. Every single human being has a longing to be intimately connected in relationship. And you would think that because we all long for it, we'd get it right. It really all comes down to this, actually. In fact, we can take these other three things: to be great, to be good, to fix what's broken. It's all coming down to, I just want to be connected with people and know where I stand. It actually all gets back to this. It goes back to Genesis. It goes back to the Adam and Eve story that we've been using, that Adam and Eve were perfect and perfectly together and perfectly in relationship with God. And then they decided that maybe there was something they needed to know that God hadn't told them, and so they decided to take a bite out of that fruit. And their eyes were open, and they became acquainted with the knowledge of good and evil. And it's kind of been downhill ever since. See, we're all trying to get back to that wholeness that was lost. Now, you weren't at the garden, okay, but you are a descendant of those who broke relationship with God. And inside of you is this desire, this strong desire to be complete, to be whole, to have identity, to find meaning and purpose. You want to be great. You want to be good. You want to be a part of making things better. And all of those things take place in the context of relationship. Without relationship, we have no way to work those things out. And so really, it's all about relationship. And we were made for this. And in fact, we have no identity. We have no information about ourselves outside of relationship. Without relationship, we don't know who we are at all. Now, in this world, you'll hear words like this. Everybody wants to be seen, to be known, to be understood, to be heard. And I think these things are all true. But they're kind of trendy words, and sometimes those things can lose their grit. So I want to suggest that what we really want, alluding to the Genesis story, is we want to be emotionally naked and unashamed. We want to be in a relationship where we can be emotionally naked, but unashamed. Now, as we go into this, we have to deal with the biggest mistake in the area of intimacy that our culture, and probably all cultures for all time, make. But it's so public in our culture today. It's so, and in so many different ways. So, let me just say it. Sex is not intimacy. Now, I want to be clear, this message is not about sex, and we won't stay here for long, but we can't not talk about it because our culture is so obsessed with sex as the full expression of what it means to be human. And it's not. It's a false narrative. Now, the narrative that informs this, and you can see this in the culture, and if I can be so bold, many young people that I know, as well as the broader culture, many people who say they believe in Jesus still subscribe to this narrative. And that narrative is the body is all there is. Now, if the body is all there is, seeking pleasure is the highest good that you can have. And you better seek it while you can get it, because if your body goes away, you have no access to pleasure anymore. If the body is all there is, you should be very afraid of the COVID. And haven't we seen in our culture a panic? Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't be smart and safe. But for those people who are in intimate relationship with Jesus and the body is not all there is, we have to look at things through a different lens. So, touching on this, sex is one of the greatest, maybe the greatest gift for intimacy that God has given to humanity. In the proper experience of sexual intercourse between a man, a husband, and a woman, his wife, we experience literally the ecstasy of relationship and intimacy and the incredible pleasure of creating. It's a reflection of God who is one, making giving us an opportunity to be one in an act which actually creates life. But sex, and hear this, is not the ultimate expression of love toward another person. This is the false story. I like you. I like you a lot. I really like you. I like you, and you are like I can barely keep my hand. And we love each other. So sex then is the expression of love. And in our culture, in our media, it's like, I can't resist you. But that's just physical. And I hate to refer back to nature videos, but you can watch that on a nature video, okay? We are not animals. Now, I am not an expert on this stuff, okay? But I just know I've read a lot and thought about this a lot, and I see the pain that this causes the people that I care about the most, which are young people, no offense to you guys. I mean, not that you guys are old. Anyway, all right. Sex is not the ultimate expression of love. What sex is a gift from God is a gift from God to cement a commitment to love. If it's done properly, and we don't do it properly, and no culture ever has, okay? This is not a guilt sermon, okay? This is just the reality. If it was done properly, where the only sexual expression was in the confines, in the correct boundaries of marriage, then what would happen is two people who have committed to each other would then be given a gift that would make them stay with each other. Now, this is a little bit awkward, but basically, this is worth hanging out for. Because left to ourselves in our broken state, we're not going to maintain a relationship based just on our desire to maintain the relationship because we're flawed and broken. God gives us a gift to cement that together. And physiologically, and maybe some of you guys know this, it is actually physiologically, hormonally making love. Like it makes love. Like hormonally, we have this experience that releases hormones that actually create connection between the two people. So when God talks about it through Paul and says, actually you become one, and that you should, like, you become one with a person in that situation. This is in 1 Corinthians 6, and I got a little bit lost there for a sec. But when God talks about it, he's given us a way that binds us together spiritually and emotionally, but it's also hormonal. And so when that thing takes place physiologically, it binds those people together. Two people who might not be able to stay together are now bound together. What an amazing gift. And Paul talks about this. Paul acknowledges this. So in 1 Corinthians 7, Paul talks about it this way. He says, hey, men and women, it's a crap world out there. And so because there's so much immorality, okay, this is a long time ago. Each husband, each man should have his own wife. Each woman, wife, should have her own husband. And your bodies don't belong to each other. And then he says this, don't deprive each other except by mutual consent and for a time. So you can devote yourselves to prayer, then come together again so that Satan will not tempt you by your lack of self-control. Like, this is an amazing thing. Paul, if you read this correctly, is basically saying if you're married, you ought to be having sex. And quite a bit. Because it binds you together. And in fact, if you don't do that, your relationship will fall apart. But what happens when sex is unhinged from the boundaries in which it was for which it was created? This is essentially what happens. It sears the conscience. So what is supposed to bind a person together, if a person, especially in the culture we live in today, is having multiple partners and moving around, the message of sex becomes sex equals. There's supposed to be a connection. It happens physiologically, but then the message that's associated with sex is this relationship will not last. An unconscious message gets built into our human heart, which says, I can have this physical experience, but the relationship won't last. Not it will last. What happens is, when sex is outside of its correct boundaries, is the emotional intimacy it's supposed to make stronger actually gets made more distant. And so we want to be emotionally naked and unashamed, but in our culture today, and I know I'm preaching to the choir in a lot of cases here, but maybe somebody's out there that's wrestling with this. We skip the emotional naked and we go right to just the naked. And we have an intimacy and a spiritual and emotional and physiological connection outside of emotional commitment. And it causes people to become more separated from people, not closer. And friends, and you know this, in our culture today, the young people are paying the price for this. Actually, it turns out that this is the problem with all of our relational strategies. The very thing that we try to do actually ends up creating more distance between us and the people we care about, not less distance. So let me jump into that quickly and hopefully get done in a timely fashion. We are all built for relationship. And this is true from the moment you come out of the womb. The moment you are born, you are as a baby, you are receiving information from other people about who you are and how you can fit in the world. And so I'll ask a very simple question. When a baby is born, what does every baby need? Every baby needs something. I'm going to answer it for you. We don't have time for discussion. All right, this is what every baby needs. Every baby needs a mom and a dad that love each other perfectly so that the adult relationship is stable and the baby can look up and say, look, my mom and dad love each other. I'm in a safe place. And then they need to be loved perfectly by their parents. Perfect means in the boundaries, unconditional love. When you get outside the boundaries, you are instructed back in, so to speak. Now, quick question. Who gets a perfect family like that? Perfect parents with perfect kids. Anybody want to volunteer to say, yeah, we were pretty much on that? Nobody. And what this means is that, and this is some neurological stuff, by the time you're about 3 or so years old, a big foundational part of your emotional makeup is established in your brain. Now, you can work on it, but before you can even remember anything, and some of you will say, I remember something when I was 2, you might remember a little something, but you don't remember stories from that time. Before you have the ability to code memories in language, you are coding them with emotions. And you have emotional insecurities that take place from the time you are born until you're 3 years old that become a foundational part of who you are as a human being. And you start working them out then, and you spend... How many of you guys know we're still working out some stuff that happened to us when we were kids? All of us. And in fact, foundationally, every single one of us from the time we were 3 had something, because we didn't get a perfect family, we had some insecurities, we had some things that made us feel very sad or mad, or we felt guilty, or we were afraid. I don't know what happened in any of our lives. I can't remember my own life, much less yours. But all of us had insecurities. And from the time we started to have a brain, and that sounds weird, but from the time we started to be able to think for ourselves and develop strategies, we developed a personality to cover up our insecurities. Nobody wants to feel sad or mad or guilty or anxious or afraid all the time. And so when you get to be a little bit older, you start building a personality to protect yourself from that. Your personality was formed when you were a child, partially out of a desire to not feel the things that you felt, because by the time you were 3 years old, you had some insecurities. This is just kind of human personality development. And then that personality becomes a way to protect you from negative things. So my personality, you know, I'll just kind of jump into mine a little bit. My personality was, I'm just going to be a really nice person and try and help as many people as I can. Because if I help them, then I'll get good feedback from them and it will make me feel good. The problem was I then became dependent on helping other people, and I needed the other people to tell me I was a good person. And if they didn't tell me I was a good person, then I felt insecure, which made me help more but feel less. And we all have this personality brokenness. We become one thing, but it's actually to hide from something else. And the very strategies we use actually create division. When we become dependent on another human being to meet our needs, the closer we get to that person, the more vulnerable we are, the more it hurts, when they can't do it. I can say with absolute conviction, the person I have hurt most in this world is my wife. And not just because I did worse things, I just did them a lot more frequently and on a lot more intimate of a relationship. And the next four people are my kids. Because in my attempt to get from them something, I actually broke relationship with them. And we all do this. The harder we try, the harder we get. And this is a part of human relationship that causes brokenness within us. And where we end up is feeling more and more lonely. And it's all about expectations. What are the expectations that I have in the closest relationships? And this is really a simple example, right? But if I go to the grocery store and I get in line behind a lady and I say hello to the lady and the lady ignores me, I don't really care. And what do I think? Well, she's kind of rude. But I'm not going to think anything about me. But if that lady is my wife and I say, hey, and she ignores me, we got some problems. Right? It's all about the expectation of what that relationship is. In fact, this is maybe especially true in marriage, and it's something that we just have to be aware of. No human being is capable of meeting our needs for deepest intimacy, and we discover that in marriage more than any other place. And in fact, it's probably true that it is in the marriage relationship that God has given us the closest place where we can experience it and the most glaring example of where we can. And so this is a hard teaching. People don't like this teaching, but the Sadducees came to Jesus and said, well, there were seven brothers, and they didn't believe in resurrection. There were seven brothers, and one died and then passed his wife off to the next, and they all died. Like, who's going to be married to her in heaven? And Jesus says something that no married people like to hear. In fact, I talked with a kid this week, didn't want to hear it. When the dead rise, they're not going to marry or be given in marriage. Like, what's going on with that? Like, we commit our lives to somebody, then we're going to go to heaven and spend eternity, and we're not even going to be married anymore? Like, that's really weird. However, I would like to suggest that there's a reason why that is. Have you ever been to the Grand Canyon? I'd never been to the Grand Canyon, but I had looked at a whole bunch of pictures. You can look at pictures of the Grand Canyon, right? Have you ever been to the Grand Canyon? Have you ever looked at the pictures of the Grand Canyon and said, ooh, I'd love to go to the Grand Canyon? You know where this is going. If you go to the Grand Canyon and take your book of pictures along and you sit at the edge of the Grand Canyon and you look at the pictures and someone says, there's the canyon, you're like, no, I just want to look at the pictures. That's not right. Like, that's just dumb. It doesn't mean that the pictures aren't valuable. It doesn't mean that they didn't point you toward the thing that you went to see. It just means you don't need the pictures anymore. When we are in the presence of Jesus in heaven, the fullness of our identity will be complete. We will know who we are completely. We will be emotionally naked and unashamed. We will be completely received. And while I will know my wife, my wife and our relationship will not be the picture of the one that I came for. Now, I don't understand that completely. But it seems to me that the more I know Jesus, the more emotionally naked I can be with everybody, but especially with my wife. Because here's what happens. When you know yourself through the eyes of Jesus, you no longer need other people's opinions of you. And it frees you to serve them in the manner for which you were created. Like, when I truly enter into relationship with Jesus and I know who I am through Jesus, I don't need Teresa to give me a certain kind of feedback, to treat me a certain kind of way, to talk to me a certain kind of way, because I know who I am in something else. And so now it's not that like I don't need her, it's like I don't need her. And so now I can serve her. I can actually love the way I have been loved, as Jesus said, love as you have been loved. I now have a better way to serve my wife because I don't need her affirmation. Now, do any of us ever get there? No. It's a gong show in marriage, isn't it? I mean, we're constantly bumping into each other and bumping in with our emotions and our needs. But if we're moving towards that, intimacy in marriage can be greater. We want to be emotionally naked. We just don't know how to do it. And we know that this was true right from the start, because when Adam and Eve first took that bite and they knew the knowledge of good and evil, the first thing they did was notice that each other were naked. The first thing they did was hide from each other. Then God comes in the garden. And we've been doing it ever since, not only in marriage, but with our kids, with our coworkers, with our friends, with church members. We've got this outer shell personality that we're continually building up to protect ourselves, to keep from being vulnerable. Which, believe it or not, brings us back to Martha and Mary. Now, to be clear, Martha and Mary is a story that's pulled out for women all the time, and can we just not do that for today? And this is really easy for the women, but it's very hard for men. Men hear Martha and Mary and think, oh, that's a sermon for women. Because we are informed by male figures like Peter and John and the apostles, and then the women are supposed to listen to learn about Peter, learn about being, you know, a Christian from Peter. Today, men, just learn about being a Christian from Martha and Mary. Don't think about the fact that they're ladies. It doesn't matter. Martha is an example of someone who gets her role right. She finds her security in what she does. She thinks being good is serving. It's really good. And she's great in that she's got connection with the big man. Like, she can go directly to him and talk to him. But she believes that what makes her whole is the actions and the role that she fulfills. And some of us do that with our jobs. We do that with the way that we serve in communities like church. Martha gets it right in that she's has a role that serves others, but she then thinks that that's the way everybody ought to be. And in fact, her own insecurities are exposed by the fact that Mary doesn't do what she's doing. She applies her standards of behavior to others. We do this sometimes. I'm good. I know what I'm doing. You should be just like that. And then she goes to Jesus. Now, this is brilliant, right? This is how you know that you are in trouble. When you, and some of us have done this, when you go to Jesus and you say, Jesus, tell her, when you start telling Jesus what to do, you got a problem. We know Martha's got a problem because he goes to Jesus and she tells Jesus what to do. And Jesus responds in the only way that Jesus can. It's not that Martha's not doing good things. It's not that Jesus would be like, Martha, what are you doing fixing all this stuff? Why don't you sit down here and listen? That's not the point. But what Jesus says is what we need to hear today. There are a lot of things to be worried and upset about, including what other people will think if I'm not serving the way I'm supposed to serve. Like, Mary's not serving. What are people going to think? There are a lot of things to be worried and upset about. Jesus says this, really, there's only one thing that you need. It's me. You just need me. Jesus says this to you, to me. There really is something missing. There really is. There always has been. And to everyone who will accept the presence of God in their life through the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross, you can find it. You can have that thing. You will not find it in another person. You will not find it in a job. You will not find it in achievement. You will not find it in accumulation of material possessions. You will not find it in entertainment. You will find it in the person of Jesus and in a relationship with God. And this is true. You're going to determine who you are based on information that comes from outside of you. You started doing it when you were a baby. You're still doing it today. You look to other people for information that helps you understand who you are as a person. But here's the thing. If you're going to do that, because you are, why not choose the one who actually knows you and actually loves you and rely on Jesus for the information that tells you who you are? It frees you from the pressure of performing for other people. All of a sudden, I know who I am. Now, some people say this. They'd be like, well, I don't care what people think. This is just who I am. Okay, that's not what I'm talking about here. First of all, please care what people think. We don't need people walking around saying, I don't care what people think. We'd like you to be civil. We'd like you to be nice. We'd like you to take a shower, brush your teeth. Okay, like we please care. But secondly, yeah, you do care. Maybe you got hurt and you developed a personality that said, I just won't let anybody get close. And it's not only preventing you from being close to the people around you, but it may be preventing you from getting close to Jesus. And I just want to encourage you, today is the day. People who know Jesus become reconnected with the source of what they were made for. They find what's missing, and they become great people. They're continually making the world a better place by serving other people. They become good people. Not good as in they do good things, because everybody does good things, and a lot of people who know nothing about Jesus are doing good things, but they become good in that they see in every other human being the image of God. They know that the fullness of goodness is present in the created human being, and the capacity for goodness is amazing. And they become people who help fix what's broken. Now, sometimes they're out there actually fixing what's broken. Tangible actions. Sometimes they're just really good at like fixing washing machines and stuff like that. Other times they're really good at fixing social and human problems. But sometimes people fix what's broken just by their very presence. People who walk into the room and you just go, actually things are a little better. These are people who are filled with Jesus and who bring into the room good news. These people are the gospel in flesh. And the more intimate we are with Jesus, the more our intimate need for connection through relationship comes from Jesus, the more we are free to become good news. And have we ever lived at a time in your life when we needed more good news? And so as we close, not only today, but our five-part series, my encouragement to you is re-examine or examine for the first time your relationship with Jesus. Is that where your identity is coming from? And can you redouble your efforts? Or if you've never accepted Jesus, if you've never just taken that step of faith and said, Jesus, I need you because nothing else is working, embrace Jesus. Be found in intimate relationship with Him. You will be good. You will be great. You'll be a part of making this a better place for yourself, for your family, for your church, for your community, and indeed for the world. God bless you.